If you listened last week, you heard me play an all R.E.M. soundtrack, 3 hours of R.E.M. songs from across their canon. It was inspired by a post in Welcome to Hell World, which is a newsletter written by Luke O'Neill that often is very focused on the difficulties of our experience in America in this day and age, interspersed a lot of humor and a lot of music writing. And I read that piece and was, once again, my love for R.E.M. was reignited. So joining me on the phone this week is the author himself, Luke O'Neill. Welcome to Against the Grain, Luke.
Hey, thanks for having me, buddy.
It is my pleasure. So before we get too far into it, just so if people aren't familiar with you, and I don't know why they wouldn't be at this point, but in case they have not heard of Welcome to Hell World or A Creature Wanting Form, Welcome to Hell World, for me as a longtime reader, it's a newsletter that not only do I read religiously, but it's become kind of an indispensable voice in I don't want to say cultural critique, but in providing a clear-eyed assessment of where we are in the world at this point, cutting through a lot of the noise and the bottom feeding of traditional media. And in a sense, it's almost an old-fashioned muckraking piece of journalism in calling truth to power. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah, I think that's a generous description. I spent a lot of time in the traditional media, newspapers and magazines and things like that. And you know, I started the newsletter maybe about 5 years ago now, and you know, my instincts were to sort of unlearn everything that I learned in the sort of traditional media, you know, the hearing both sides type of thing, and deference to power and all of that.
Yeah,
which is, you know, I started out in all weeklies, so it's got my first job was at the Dig in Boston, and then the Boston Phoenix, and so it's got a lot of that sort of sensibility from what all weeklies used to be like in, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s. And, you know, sadly, there's very few of those left. And, you know, it feels like it fills that hole for a lot of people who read it.
It does. And as someone that, you know, we crave information, but I want something accurate. But more than that, I want to, as a reader, I certainly appreciate great writing, but I also want to feel like I belong to a community. And a lot of what's threaded through the Welcome to Hell World newsletter, especially on the serious subjects, is this righteous outrage, but it's not misplaced. It's a righteous outrage that it doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to be, whether it's qualified immunity for police or the state of American healthcare, and I don't mean this to be humorous, my dog has better healthcare coverage than I do. And, you know, stuff like that just blows my mind. And it creates, you create this community of folks. And for those of us, and I'm very open about on the radio and in my real life as well, in talking about depression and anxiety and dealing with mental health issues, because we have to be open about these things and destigmatize it to whatever degree we're able to. And as much as you are open in the newsletter about your own struggles in that area, it's really created this community of folks that feel like they belong to something and feel a part of a larger whole than just themselves and our day-to-day mundane existences. And it's quite an accomplishment that it's also infused with a great amount of humor. It's not, you know, I don't want to suggest to the audience listening that it's this dour, downer, depressing right. thing. It really is a very funny and a great read, whatever the subject matter may be. And I applaud you for being able to create a community like that gives those of us that otherwise kind of feel like we're floating out alone to feel like there are a lot of others that are experiencing similar vibes in our current condition.
Well, thank you for saying that. And yeah, you mentioned, you know, the humor that is really important to me, you know, mostly just because I like, you know, writing funny things. But when the subject matter is, you know, subject matter is often, you know, really terrible stuff. I don't think most people would want to just read a catalog of all the terrible things that happened this week in, you know, in the United States. So you kind of have to give people a reason to keep reading, you know, and the humor, I think, helps with that.
Without question, it does. A lot of it's very sort of arch and ironic that comes out of nowhere. And I find myself cracking up and having to go back and then reread what I just read because I had to take a break to crack up for a second.
Well, yeah, because these subjects aren't funny, you know.
Yeah.
Predatory healthcare and police violence and school shootings and all that sort of stuff. I mean, it's not funny, but it is absurd in a way because we know the reasons that we have to suffer through all these things. It's because, you know, largely because of the greed of the richest and the people who run the country. It is a joke that, you know, that we have so many healthcare problems or that we have people in healthcare debt.
Yeah,
we have student debt, you know, like it doesn't, you kind of have to laugh at a certain point because it's just so grossly, you know, so much gross greed and indifference to suffering, you know?
For sure. And it almost feels like we're reaching a point in our, you know, I hate to say the phrase late stage capitalism, but it's getting to a point in this country that you can't criticize rich people anymore. You can't criticize the oligarchy that actually runs the country. And it seems like the laws that are being proposed and the encroaching fascism that we're facing day to day is in large part that you better not criticize the people that really make the engine go or you're out.
Right. It's, yeah, it's, you know, and that's part of what my problem is with more traditional newspapers and magazines and certainly cable news. They'll certainly report on some of the consequences, but then they don't dig deeper into the causes of the problems, you know?
Mm.
So, you know, and I feel like that's what people find refreshing about Hell World, my newsletter, and you know, other similar lefty writers right now, is that, you know, we are allowed to name the perpetrators, you know, in regular newspaper or on cable news, you sort of have to tiptoe around it. Particularly, you know, in the New York Times and the Washington Post, who are really sort of, you know, obviously do a lot of great reporting, but are really dropping the ball on, you know, saying this is why this bad thing happened. Here are the people who are making this happen. You know, they'll just kind of tell you that it happened.
Yeah, for sure. And I think a lot of what comes up in Hell World is that there's an underlying theme of it doesn't have to be this way. There are alternatives, and we're not often allowed to speak about them because you might bite the hand that feeds, so to speak, in the corporate media that, you know, they're there to maintain the status quo and nothing more. It's entertainment. I don't watch cable news. I gave it up a long time ago because I couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah, me neither.
You know, and just the discussions are all dancing around the actual why, to your point, they we have to cover both sides. You don't have to cover both sides. Cover the side that's right, not the side that, not to give both sides equal say when one is clearly talking, I got to be careful how I say this on the radio, talking out of a body part that shouldn't be.
Right. But yeah, I find it supremely frustrating. And, you know, part of that is that in order to make it to these prestigious positions in media, you sort of have to be a company man. You know, you kind of have to go along a bit. And, you know, anyone, like, you know, they talk about, you know, airing, you know, both sides of the conversation, you know, or trying to play it down the middle. But the idea of what the middle actually is so perverted. You know, the country, the default in this country is so far right.
Yeah.
That, you know, Joe Biden, they can make him out to look like a socialist, you know? and the newspapers and cable news don't do a good job of pointing out how ridiculous that is. You know, like everyone acted like Bernie Sanders was some revolutionary. Well, meanwhile, like most of the stuff he's talking about would be like sort of centrist in many other countries, you know?
For sure. Yeah, that's the thing. One of the big tropes from the far right is, which is certainly a code word, is the Western world, which is code for white supremacy. But in most Western countries, they have universal health care and free education, and people actually live lives that don't depend on not breaking an arm to survive financially.
Right, exactly. and that's part of what we're talking about with, like, it doesn't have to be like this. It's like, it's not, I mean, there are certain things that would be supremely difficult to achieve that I'd like for us to achieve, but a lot of them, you know, wouldn't be that, they're not like that pie in the sky, you know? Like, there's no other country where students go into this massive student debt that they can't climb out of, you know? Like, And Biden didn't go far enough with his original proposal, in my opinion, but you saw how, like, everyone reacted to that as if, you know, it was as if he was doing something insane. It's like, no, like, these people have been paying, I mean, myself included, I've been paying, you know, I went to a fine school in the fine city of Worcester, as a matter of fact, and I've been not a cheap one. And I've been paying, you know, $400 a month every month for 20 plus years, and I still have student debt, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm in my mid-40s, and, like, I'm, you know, much better off than a lot of people. Like I did one story about people who've been paying, you know, let's say they paid in, like, $40,000, and then, you know, over years and years, and then their debt, like, what they owe is only gone up, you know, of people who paid like $50,000 and they haven't even broken into the interest rate yet.
And that's the thing, the interest, the usury rates of compounding interest and you know, telling an 18-year-old kid, oh, sure, just sign here and don't worry about it, when they're going to be compounded at 10 or 11% of interest annually and borrow right. 100 grand to have to pay back 400 grand, it's impossible.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the thing, like, I always say, you know, it's more expensive to be poor in this. Like, things cost more expensive. Things are more expensive for poor people than they are for rich people here. And like the idea against student debt forgiveness was it was going to be a handout to some like elites or whatever. But the elites, they don't take out student loans. They just pay right. up. You know, they just pay the cost, or else their dad donates to the museum wing or something. You know, like right. that's what the elites are. The elites aren't like some jerk like me who writes a blog and still has debt, is going to have debt until he's like, you know, taking, you know, sorry, I'm trying not to swear.
not easy for either of us.
yeah, until I'm taking, you know, heart medication.
Yeah. But that's the thing. The elites are the ones that are making the decisions in the first place, saying, no, you can't have this. We need to maintain our usury rates. We need to make insane profits on the backs of your innocence in going to college and trying to get an education to better your life, because we've sold you this idea of the American dream that if you get a degree, you'll get the job, you get the house, you get the husband or wife, you get the golden ticket. And increasingly, the myth is being pulled away, and you have people going into debt that, you know, my girlfriend's daughter is a junior at Providence College, who just started this week, as a matter of fact. And she's going to graduate and immediately begin repaying debt. It's saddled with the stuff and without really knowing what you want to do with your life and where you're going to go or the other turns that it may take. And it's the elites that are making the decision in the first place on all policies. So we might get crumbs. And then the second you raise a question about, I don't know, an $886 billion annual defense budget, and if you ask a single question about where that money's going to, you're called a traitor.
Right. It's the same thing that happened with the defund the police. Movement, you know, it's like pretty much every city, and I'm sure this is true of Worcester as well. And I do read the fine newsletter, Worcester Sucks.
Bill Shaner,
yeah, he does a great job.
Yep.
The bulk of what we spend in every city is on police, and then the people reacted to the idea. Well, what if we took a little bit of that away and put it into, you know, more preventative measures? You know, what if instead of sending like a squadron of jacked up armed thugs to go toss a homeless encampment. What if we, like, you know, all the money we spent on overtime for them to go beat people up and throw their stuff around, what if we, like, spent that on a house for these people to live in? And, you know, any people react like crying babies for any sort of incremental change, stuff like that. And it can be really demoralizing, you know.
For sure.
It's tempting to want to just throw your hands up and say, you know, screw it. What does it matter? I feel like we're not doing a good job of living up to the humorous part of my old deal that we talked about earlier. Sorry.
That's okay. It's easy to get outraged again, but there is a fair point. I read Shaner's newsletter as well, and if it's another one, if you're a local resident, you want to read exceptional local journalism, which our legacy media is totally defaulted on providing. Read Bill Shaner's Worcester Sucks and I Love It newsletter, especially if you want to see what's going on in our city council and the police and the fact that the police overtime budget goes up every year while they're under federal DOJ investigation for some of their practices. Everything's going swimmingly there. But within that, you know, you very often, you know, as a musician yourself and as a music writer on and off for quite a long time, you've done some newsletters, and this is where the inspiration for the show came from. A couple of months ago, or I don't know how long ago it was, the Weezer one, we asked a bunch of musicians and writers to write about their favorite Weezer songs. And then, admittedly, I'm not the Weezer fan that you are, so I'm not going to weigh in with an opinion on that one. I'm working on it, but, you know.
Okay. No, I'll give you a pass on that one.
I appreciate it.
Unlike REM, like, they are really hit or miss, whereas REM, it's pretty much just, like, top to bottom, all good, you know?
Yeah, that was the thing. When I was preparing the show last week and going through and putting a playlist together, you know, you forget, like, every single album, there's not a clunker. Like, every one of them works.
Right, right. and it's such a long period of time. Like, I don't think any other band that I am a fan of has that longevity and kept the quality that high, you know, the entire time. Like, it's maybe... I mean, a lot of people actually love some of the later records, and I don't like them as much, but they all have at least a couple of, like, songs that go in the canon, if you ask me.
I totally agree. And to that point, you know, go back to it, like for me, you know, I'm an REM fan from way back, and I remember reading Rolling Stone as a kid because that's where we got our music news from, you know, because I'm 500 years old at this point.
Yeah.
But reading, you know, and again, there's always a comparison made to try and create context for the band that's being featured. And early on, it was, you know, first it was college rock, which doesn't really exist anymore, but they're college rock, but very birdsy, jangly REM, jangly guitar sounds, which I suppose is true. But they developed what became a singular style. And to your point about the later records, I go back to Collapse Into Now, and a song like It Happened Today still stands up to me as strong as any part of that canon as anything they recorded, you know, in that great run of albums in the early 80s, mid 80s.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Another thing, I think it's weird though that like we, you know, you were talking about how people were so nostalgic about R.E.M. and your reaction to my article was huge as well. But it seems like for a band, like we said, we're just saying, we're so good for so long, it seems like they're for the past 10 years or so, like they just kind of fell off the face of the earth, you know?
Yeah.
And part of that is because they're one of the only bands of their stature that broke up and actually broke up for good. You know, they broke up and meant it.
Yeah.
I'm sure they could be, you know, doing huge numbers if they decided to do a reunion tour right now. But I feel like they, you know, they sort of aren't in the conversation of bands, you know, like I'm old as well, but like bands that we listened to growing up that still get recycled into youth culture, you know,
yeah.
Like I think a lot of kids these days still listen to The Cure, like, you know, they're discovering The Cure, they're discovering The Smiths,
yep.
You know, Pixies and stuff like that. But I didn't have the sense that REM is one of those bands, you know, that you're like, the sort of the hip high school kid who's learning about older music. I don't know that REM is one of those bands that is still in the rotation.
You know? You don't have a 15-year-old kid buying an REM t-shirt at Target and, you know, wearing it at school with some sense of pride to discover
right.
them.
Like I gather Nirvana t-shirts are huge amongst kids these days, you know,
I'll have to ask the kids.
Yeah,
but it's true. I mean, I'm a Deadhead. I went to see Dead and Company on the final tour at Fenway. I don't know when that was, end of June, and that's another band. The Dead, you know, and again, the Dead is a singular entity, but they have multiple generations. You go to the shows, and there's kids that are 14 years old that know every word to every song because they were handed down tapes of shows from, you know, when they're in their prime in the late 70s, and they're fully immersed in that universe and then graduating to Fish and Goose and the next generation of Jam-Aids coming through. It, you know, it does perpetuate itself in that regard. And you're right that for REM, it doesn't seem like they have reached that same stature where they just become part of the American rock and roll canon the way some of these other bands have become.
Yeah. I was hoping that, you know, when they had the needle drop for Strange Currencies on that show, The Bear. I was yep. hoping that was going to introduce them to a lot of younger people who, you know, sort of that running up that hill, Stranger Things type of way. It seemed, I mean, I don't have a sense. I'm not really on TikTok, but I think that, you know, it made a little bit of a dent into that sort of stuff, but it certainly wasn't Kate Bush level.
No, it wasn't. But I did get some requests for Strange Currencies last week. And, it, you know, I mean, The Bear, I think, is such, like everything, is such a niche show at this point that
yeah.
you know, Stranger Things was massive. Where The Bear, and season 2 of The Bear, by the way, was friggin' phenomenal.
I loved it. That Christmas dinner scene traumatized me.
The whole series, just in having grown up in you write a lot about your own family in Hell World, having grown up in a very dysfunctional family and still being a member of a small and very dysfunctional family, although we didn't celebrate a lot of Christmas dinners because we were Jewish, it rings true to all the same. And there's a point I'm going to make here. And when you grow up in chaos and you grow up not really feeling secure in who you are, and in my case, my parents hated each other. I don't go too far into it, but you know, second marriages also weren't great, and you know, the myriad damage that comes with that. There's solace in music, and you find the songs that resonate yeah. for you. And I think one of the things that REM, and it really kind of re-invoked this for me last week, was how the lyrics and the meanings of the songs change as you go through life and apply your own life experiences and good, bad, indifferent, and therapy and everything else, and how that informs how you hear the songs and what they mean to you today versus how they sounded to you 20, 30 years ago. Have you found that to be similar?
The way that the way the songs...
Yeah, the way the music hits, yeah.
Over time, yeah. You certainly, you know, again, like certainly when you know, I went to high school, you know, I graduated in, you know, in the 90s, mid-90s, and that's when I started listening to REM, and I certainly wasn't, you know, by that point, you know, Michael Stipe was already, had this sort of wistful sense of longing and life, you know, passing by. You know, Automatic for the People has a lot of, you know, a lot of themes about death, and, yep. And those aren't things that you really think about much when you're a teenager. You know, you mostly just like, well, I like, these are pretty songs and they sound smart and it makes me feel cool to listen to it. But, you know, now, you know, as a man in my mid-40s, looking back, like that you can appreciate some of the more adult themes in the music that you maybe didn't hear when you first fell in love with the band, you know?
Yeah, I told a story last week on the air. I agree. It's a song of Night Swimming, and I ended the show with Night Swimming last week. To me, it's just one of the prettiest songs ever written by anybody. And it's another one that over time has changed, and that I hear that song now, and it reminds me of being at UMass. So I graduated college in 93. So I remember being at UMass in the early 90s and driving around. Automatic for the People came out in late 92. I was delivering pizza for a local pizza shop in Amherst called Bruno's, and which, all things weighted equally, was the best job I've ever had to this day. And I would go back and do it for good if I could.
Simpler times.
Yeah, it was just, you know, it was simpler times, and, you know, made, you know, cash tips, and it was just a ball. But driving around listening to Automatic for the People on cassette, because that's what my little Ford Escort had at the time. I remember being, you know, I enjoyed my college years very much, but by senior year, I was ready to go. And some of that, you know, looking back with the benefit of history and experience, I was definitely going through a pretty depressed period, and I remember driving around and just feeling very alone in a sea of people. And Night Swimming struck me as, you know, much of my friends and I would sneak out, we'd go to Puffer's Pond and go skinny dipping, go swimming drunkenly, which, you know, again, at this age, probably not the smartest thing to do. But when I hear that song now, it brings all that nostalgia back for that period of time and the innocence of youth and the innocence of being young and maybe not feeling so secure in your own skin. And really being attuned to how you might be perceived by the people you want to impress and feel cool in front of. And that's just one song out of many for REM that, to me, you know, as you get older and you go back and listen to the catalog, it brings up that nostalgia, but also just the meaning and how it hits you and how you view your life through the lens of music and through the lens of art at a larger degree. It's much more meaningful to me now than it was then, which I find kind of remarkable.
Yeah, that's the power of you know, it's sophisticated music like this, you know, it for as much as they wrote silly, you know, well, not silly, but, you know, popular music, actual pop music, you know, a lot of the time, it was really, there was a depth and a richness to it that, you know, that I think makes a band like this, you know, worthy of digging deep into and keeping with you for much of your life, you know, unlike, yeah, some other bands that might be a little, you know, less substantial that you can, you know, you still might listen to and have a fondness for, you know, nostalgia-wise. But I don't think that REM is a nostalgia act. It's not, you know,
right.
It's not just about remembering who you were, although it is that, but it's about, you know, listening and thinking about who you are now as well.
Yeah, it's not Motley Crue coming back for the 11th time, you know,
right.
And just go pretend you're 25 again for a night, you know, and listen to the dumb songs. I won't hold you much longer, but I do want to ask a couple of quick things about REM specifically. So, you know, just the point about the sophistication, even a song like Radio Song, which was one of the first to feature, you know, KRS-One's on the track, is very slyly kind of poking fun at what's on the pop charts at the time. And yet it's still resonant today when he's, you know, I'm sick of all the, you know, hey, baby, 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 I'm sick of all that stuff. And this is 30 years ago.
Right.
You know, and it's only gotten worse, along with, you know, faux popular songs like Richmond, North of Richmond, which is a whole other thing.
Yeah, that Radio Song is a very divisive one, you know, for REM fans. I think it's a great song. I don't know if KRS-One necessarily turned in his best writing ever on that one. But I think it's better than people. Yeah. A lot of people give it credit for. It's, you know, same with a lot of their sort of reviled songs, you know, "Stand" and "Shiny Hat." Make Shiny Happy People, I think, is amazing, and it was people hated it. You know,
do you think that was because of the video though? Because the video is a little silly.
Maybe. I mean, like, there are people who, you know, probably your age, who. And I have friends, you know, who were around for the early days of REM who just stopped once they, you know, maybe around like Out of Time or something, you know, and they just think of the band as having ended then. But yeah, I think they probably, a lot of them, you know, it was that kind of, I'm too cool to, this band got too big, I'm not going to listen to them anymore type of thing.
Yeah, which is too bad, because first of all, New Adventures in Hi-Fi is an incredible record.
That's woefully underrated.
Yeah.
One interesting thing I did hear with my article is, like, there's so much love for Monster among people, you know, younger than me, you know, people in their, maybe their mid-30s or something. Like, that was their entrance for REM. And, you know, that one was really, wasn't received well when it came out at all.
No, it was like they've changed their whole dynamic and, you know, become a guitar band, because that opening riff from What's the Frequency, Kenneth, blew it up. But you go through the rest of that record, and it's just killer song after killer song. And I go back even like to Green with Turn You Inside Out. Like, to me, that's a precursor to what they were going to do later on with What's the Frequency, Kenneth, and that heaviness, or the Monster album, the heaviness of that guitar riff and the plaintive voice that Stipe is singing in.
Yeah, for sure.
Luke O'Neill, thank you for joining me on Against the Grain. I also want to make a mention. You released a book a couple of months ago called A Creature Wanting Form. It is a collection of short fiction. It is, you know, it's odd to say this, you know, to the author on the phone, but it is one of the best things I've ever read by anybody. And kudos on the achievement. Please let people know where they can find the newsletter and where they can get the book, because it's important to support these critical voices. And as an independent journalist and author, people need to support what you're doing for the art.
Wow. Well, thank you so much. That's a very nice compliment. I agree. I am the greatest writer of all time. you can find,
give him an inch.
Yeah, right. You can find the newsletter at welcometohellworld.com, and A Creature Wanting Form. Ideally you'll call up your favorite independent bookstore and ask them to order it or grab it from the library, but you can just get it wherever you get, order your books online. The bad company, if you must.
Avoid them.
Yeah.
Anyway, before you go, what's an REM song you want to hear on Against the Grain tonight?
You know what? How about So Fast, So Numb?
You got it.
All right.
This is Against the Grain at 90.5 WICN. Luke O'Neill, thanks so much for joining me tonight.
This was fun. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.